Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on what the scientists say when we come back. You know, Charles Lyell, he was one of those pillars of modern geology. He published his Principles of Geology back in the early 1800s. Lyell's concepts are so widely accepted today that most people that believe in Lyell and Lyell's theories don't even know who it was that originated them. But it was from Lyell's system of reasoning that a doctrine of origins was devised. By simply projecting all of the natural processes that we observe today back through time indefinitely. That way, catastrophes like the flood, Noah's flood, were strictly ruled out. Now, this process is called science. Well, listen to this. Physicist Thomas Barnes points out that the Earth's magnetic field had been decaying regularly since it was first measured back in 1835. Now, if the half-life of the field is truly what Dr. Barnes has shown from careful measurements, then the conclusion is that Earth's magnetic field would have been equal to that of a magnetic star as little as 10,000 years ago. And according to Dr. Barnes, to be consistent with the laws of physics, and assuming the magnetic field has continually weakened, we can only conclude that life on Earth would not have been possible more than 10,000 years ago. Now, what did our teachers tell us about dinosaurs' extinction? Wasn't that 65 million years ago? Now, you know, we don't have to be a rocket scientist to do the math on these kinds of pseudoscientific lies, and it's just one more of the many examples of evolutionary propaganda that masquerades under the banner of science. And it's one more of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School, which we conduct twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? Doesn't cost you anything. And you can see whether or not this is of interest to you. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. Our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for your free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about evolutionary philosophy. The numbers tell the story. That's what I told you last time. And I said, well, what do the scientists say? The religious guys, those 330,000 preachers out there, cannot defend the Bible against evolution. So they joined evolution. They came up with what they call the gap theory. They got their own evolutionary ideology. They do not believe Genesis 1, 2, and 3. They do not believe that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 24-hour days. Most religious people do not believe that. That's what the Bible plainly says. Most religious people do not believe the flood of Noah's flood was worldwide. They believe it was local. I would just invite you to read chapter 6, 7, and 8 of Genesis and then ask yourself, is this a local or worldwide flood that's being described here? If the flood is local, then the author of Genesis 6, 7, and 8 is a liar. Just that plain and simple. It's either God told you the truth or he lied to you, one or the other. But Genesis 6, 7, and 8 is not describing a local flood that occurred in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. It's describing a flood that gouged out the Grand Canyon. You want to know where the Grand Canyon came from? It came from Noah's flood. And that's what the historical record says. Now, there are a bunch of people out here that say, no, the Bible is full of trash and it's just a damn lie. Well, okay, you know, they're entitled to their opinion. Catholics have their opinion, and Protestants have their opinion, Jews have their opinions, communists have their opinions, Democrats have their opinions. Shucks, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. And what I'm interested in here is the truth, what actually happened here. Is there some way that we could demonstrate as to what it is that actually did occur? So when we use the judicial process, when we go into court, we don't know the answer to the riddle. When two antagonists come into court and one of them says ABC and the other one says XYZ, as observers, as jurors sitting there, we don't know the answer. So we have a process that we go through called adjudication, and we bring in witnesses, evidence, and testimony. We have people that come in and testify. Sometimes they're expert witnesses. I always say that an expert witness is a professional liar. You know, both of them can't be telling the truth, and they'll bring an expert in and says one thing, and then an expert comes in for the other side and says exactly the opposite. Well, hell, they both can't be right. One of them is lying. Maybe one of them is just in error. My old granny used to correct me quite often. I'd say, well, he's lying. Oh, no, no, now wait a minute. He's mistaken. He's mistaken. And I used to argue with her and say, what the hell is the difference between being mistaken and being a liar? Right's right and wrong's wrong. You're either right or you're wrong, one or the other. Well, my granny, she used to see gray everywhere. She couldn't see black and white. And the same thing is true here in this evolution thing. I mentioned this the other day. I said, what's the biggest con that's ever been perpetrated upon mankind? And I gave you a couple, three, you know. Was it the Federal Reserve? Was it religion? Was it paper money? Global warming? Evolution? 9/11? Pearl Harbor? Remember the Maine? Columbus discovering America first? I mean, you know, there's lots of lies that have been going on for hundreds and thousands of years out there. But I think evolution takes the cake. I mean, I think evolution has got to be, you know, the broad subject matter of evolution. So this week, instead of talking about evolution, I've been talking about the specific items that these guys bring up. And there are disagreements. I'm not talking about disagreements between the religious camp and the evolution camp. I mean, there's disagreements in the evolution camp. So if you think religion is disjointed and dysfunctional, you wait until you listen to some of these arguments. And that's because those who support the theory of evolution feel that it is now an established fact. And they believe that evolution is an actual occurrence. It is a reality. It is a truth. As one dictionary defines it, or definition tells us, the word fact. But is it? Now, to illustrate, it was once believed that the earth was flat. Now it's been established for a certainty that it is spherical in shape. That is a fact. It was once believed that the earth was the center of the universe, and that the heavens revolved around the earth. Now we know for sure that the earth revolves in an orbit around the sun. This, too, is a fact. Many things that were once only debated theories have been established by the evidence as being solid fact. It's reality. It's what we call truth. Now, would an investigation of the evidence for evolution leave one on the same solid ground? Well, interestingly, ever since Charles Darwin's book, The Origin of Species, was published back in 1859, various aspects of the theory have been a matter of considerable disagreement, even among the top evolutionary scientists themselves. And today that dispute is more intense than ever. And it is enlightening to consider what advocates of evolution themselves are saying about the matter. Now, evolution is under assault. It used to be religion was under assault. Now it's evolution that's under assault. And it's not under assault by the religious guys, because the religious guys gave up the fight 100 years ago and adopted evolution as being scriptural. It's about as scriptural as adultery or murder, but, you know, people are entitled to their opinions. Now, the scientific magazine Discover put the situation this way. Evolution is not only under attack by fundamentalist Christians, but it's also being questioned by reputable scientists. Among paleontologists, scientists who study the fossil record, there is growing dissent from the prevailing view of Darwinism. Francis Hutching, or in this case, Hitching, an evolutionist and author of the book The Neck of the Giraffe, stated, "For all of its acceptance in the scientific world as the great unifying principle of biology, Darwinism, after a century and a quarter, is in a surprising amount of trouble. After an important conference of some 150 specialists in evolution held in Chicago, Illinois, a report concluded, evolution is undergoing its broadest and deepest revolution in nearly 50 years. Exactly how evolution happened is now a matter of great controversy among biologists. No clear resolution of the controversies was in sight." Paleontologist Niles Eldridge, he's a prominent evolutionist, said, "The doubt that has infiltrated the previous smugly confident certitude of evolutionary biology's last 20 years has inflamed passions." He spoke of the lack of total agreement even within the warring camps, and he added, "Things really are in an uproar these days, and sometimes it seems as though there are as many variations on each evolutionary theme as there are individual biologists." A London Times writer, Christopher Booker, who accepts evolution, said this about it all, "It was a beautifully simple and attractive theory. The only trouble was that, as Darwin himself, at least partly aware, it was full of colossal holes. Regarding Darwin's Origin of Species, he observed, we have here the supreme irony that a book which has become famous for explaining the origin of species, in fact, does nothing of the kind." Booker also stated, "A century after Darwin's death, we still have not the slightest demonstrable or even plausible idea of how evolution really took place. And in recent years, this has led to an extraordinary series of battles over the whole question. A state of almost open war exists among the evolutionists themselves, with every kind of evolutionary sect urging some new modification. And he concluded, as to how and why it really happened, we have not the slightest idea, and probably never will." Evolutionist Hitching agreed, saying feuds concerning the theory of evolution exploded. Entrenched positions for and against were established in high places, and insults lobbed like mortar bombs from each side. He said that it is an academic dispute of far-reaching proportions. Potentially, one of those times in science when, quite suddenly, a long-held idea is overthrown by the weight of contrary evidence and a new one takes its place. And Britain's New Scientist observed that an increasing number of scientists, most particularly a growing number of evolutionists, argue that Darwinian evolutionary theory is no genuine scientific theory at all. Many of the critics have the highest intellectual credentials. Now, the names that I've just cited here, you know, these are people that write books and have PhDs and teach college classes. And they're arguing among themselves as to the validity of Darwinian evolution. Now, the religious camp has already thrown in the towel and conceded that evolution must be true. Now, 100 years later, the evolutionists come back after tinkering around in the laboratories with their test tubes and vials, come back and say, you know, this thing's got holes all over it. It reminds me of the Catholic Church, you know, threatening Galileo, you know, with death unless he recanted over his observations of the earth revolving around the sun. It's just religious dogma. Now, the Bible is a science book, and I'm probably the only guy in the world that believes the Bible is a science book, and that's because there are many scientific statements that are made in the Scripture thousands of years ago. Now, take a look at this evolutionist. Been on the market since 1859. Actually, evolution goes back into the ancient pagan religions of Babylon, Ashkelon and Ashdod, and Egypt and Assyria and so on. But in its modern form, you know, evolution in its modern form goes back to 1859. So, I mean, we're only talking about maybe 150 years or less. And in its modern form, the religious guys, they just threw in the towel. About 1880 to 1900, they just said, well, you know, the evidence is just overwhelming that evolution is true. And so, therefore, they went into the Bible and they took out Genesis chapter 1:1 and they said, well, let's invent a theory of our own. It's called the gap theory. That is, evolution is true, but God uses evolution to create. And it took him 7,000 years to do that. That's just poppycock. It isn't science. And it isn't the Scripture either. It is just exactly what it's claimed to be. It's religion. And I'm not here to argue or pick a fight with you religious guys out there. I mean, hell, you're entitled to your opinion. But if you want to believe something, it should have some semblance of truth behind it. If it's historical, then we should have some historical evidence of it. And if it's scientific, we should have some scientific evidence of it. If it's scriptural, we should have some scriptural evidence of it. Whatever it is that we want to believe or hold to, you know, we should be able to go to the appropriate authorities, the appropriate sources, and pull out the evidence. So if, you know, we say the earth is flat, well, what evidence do you have that the earth is flat? Well, you can observe that it's flat. Just go to Iowa and start driving. Just go to Kansas and drive for a while. Go to Nebraska. And you can see that the earth is flat. From our perspective on the ball, the earth is indeed flat. But when you get up into orbit and you take pictures of the earth, it's a sphere, it's round. And so what does the Bible say about the configuration of the earth? It says the earth is round. It talks about the circle of the earth. Job and Isaiah both describe the earth as being round, not flat. And when they said that, thousands of years ago, the prevailing orthodoxy, the prevailing scientific view of the day was that the earth was flat. And then the religious guys, you know, they get in on the act and then they make pronouncements and they say the world is flat and anybody that disagrees is a heretic. And then, you know, then we find out the earth is in fact round. And then we find out that in these inquisitions and the killing of thousands of people because they were heretics, because they believed something different than the church, you know, then we look back on it and say, well, gee, that was a mistake. Talking about the Inquisition, you know, where the Catholic Church, you know, pronounced death upon all the heretics, the Protestants, and killed them by the tens of thousands. Maybe by the millions, I don't know. But at least by the tens of thousands. Well, there are cases where 10, 20, 30,000 people, like the Huguenots or the Hutterites, or I guess Huguenots are gone, were killed, 30,000 of them, all in one fell swoop. I mean, that's the kind of crap that goes on under the guise of religion, you know. And so the science people, you know, have just rejected religion out of hand as being superstitious nonsense. I couldn't agree more. But religion doesn't come from the Hebrew Scriptures. It comes from the Bible. Catholicism doesn't come from the Bible. It comes from paganism. pure and simple. So when the scientists reject religion, I think that they're correct. And when the religionists, when they embrace evolution, I think that makes all the sense in the world. Religion has been pagan from day one. One time, a guy sent me a letter here one day, and he said, the new dollar, they've got a new dollar out now, a new coin. And he wrote me a letter, and he said, this dollar does not have "In God We Trust" upon it. And I looked at that, and I thought to myself, and I said, well, why would we want to put "In God We Trust" on our money? We do not trust in God. The people of the United States of America do not trust in God. We trust in the United States of America, and we trust in our military machine, and we trust in our schools. We trust in our universities. We do not trust in the God of the Bible. I mean, we've got lots of gods out here, I guess, that we trust in. So I looked at that, and I said, you know, I don't see any reason why we should have the Bible in public school. You know, religious people, they're incensed. I don't think that the Bible belongs in public school any more than the Bible belongs in a whorehouse. The Bible is a book at diametric and exact odds and opposites to public school and whorehouses. And I don't see any reason why we should put "In God We Trust" on our money. The Bible teaches that we should be using just weights and balances, that we should be using gold and silver coin. That's a just weight and balance. We want to put "In God We Trust" on a clad coin that's made out of copper and nickel and call it a dollar, and then put on there, "Oh, we trust in God." Boys and girls, if you trusted in God, it would seem like to me you'd have gold and silver coin. We used to trust in God. We used to put "In God We Trust" on our coin. And we used to have gold and silver coin. Our founding fathers believed in the Bible to such an extent that they put 22 principles of the Ten Commandments into our federal constitution, which has been no end of embarrassment to our government from that day to this, as they work mightily to stamp the Bible and God and every biblical principle in the Ten Commandments out of our public schools. At least the whores are honest about it. I mean, you don't go into a whorehouse and say, "Why don't you have the Ten Commandments posted on the wall? Why don't you have the Bible in? Why don't we have a prayer before we go into the bedroom?" You know, whores are pragmatic people. They're not religious. They're not out here as a bunch of damn hypocrites, you know, preaching about the Bible in a whorehouse. Religious people do that. Now, there's a dilemma here, you know, over origins. And regarding the question of how life originated, astronomer Robert Jastrow said, to their chagrin, that is, to the chagrin of scientists, "We have no clear-cut answer, and that's because chemists have never succeeded in reproducing nature's experiments on the creation of life out of non-living matter." You know, they've been out here in the test tubes, and they've been building little fires under Bunsen burners, you know, with their Bunsen burners and their test tubes. Nobody's ever been able to create life out of inorganic matter. Now, there is a guy that claims that he can do that. He said he took dust. He told Adam, he says, "Dust thou art, and unto dust thou shalt return." Boys and girls, that's a scientific statement. When you take a human body and you burn it down to ash, and then you take the ashes into the laboratory and you do a chemical analysis, you can actually break it down and you can identify the chemicals, and they all come out of the ground. You know, you're made up of iron and potassium and hydrogen and oxygen. You know, your body is made up of the elements of the earth. "Dust thou art." And he made another scientific statement, and he said, "Unto dust shalt thou return." It's another scientific statement. When you die, boys and girls, your body disintegrates. Now the Egyptians, they said, well, we're going to fix God, you know. We're going to prove God wrong. So they came up with a process called embalming. And so they embalmed their aristocrats, their elitists. And to this day, you've got these elitists of the old Roman, or not Roman, but the Egyptian dynasties, you know. They're wrapped up in their mummified remains. Some of them are on display in the museums. And what they hope to do, and what people hope to do when they get cremated, we're going to thwart God. I'm not going to be buried. I'm going to be cremated. My ashes scattered over the ocean. Now, when you're cremated, all you've done is proved a scientific point brought out in the scripture 6,000 years ago. That is, dust thou art, Adam, and unto dust thou shalt return. That's science right there. And the Bible's full of those kinds of statements that we can document today. Now, the scientist comes along and he says, no. Life came from inorganic matter by accident. Okay. Can we observe that going on today? No. Can we reproduce it in the laboratory? No. If we could reproduce it in the laboratory, would it prove evolution? No. It would prove that a superior intelligence created life out of inorganic matter. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that we will never be able to create life out of inorganic matter. If the creator of the universe can do it, and he did. And then he said, and now nothing will be restrained from them. And now we have nuclear power. And now we have submarines. And now we have space flight. I mean, come on. I wouldn't go so far as to say that it is impossible or can't be done. It's been done in the past. We know it can be done. We just haven't done it yet. That doesn't mean that we can't. But random chance, an explosion in a print shop, doesn't produce the encyclopedia. And a smart bomb dropped on an Iraqi house doesn't blow it up and the pieces come down by random chance into something more orderly than the house that it blew up. Explosions do not produce order. They produce disorder. And the Big Bang is an explosion. And an explosion does not produce order. It produces disorder. That's science. And that's why I say this evolution thing over here doesn't even rise to the level of science fiction. An explosion never produces order. The universe is orderly. The earth revolves around the sun, boys and girls, with precision. The earth doesn't, you know, go from 93 million miles to 36 million miles and then out to 150 million miles in its orbit. If it did, life wouldn't be possible here. It's very constant. The Earth is tilted at 23.5 degrees. It revolves itself, and then it circles the sun. That's not an accident. We're looking at design. We're looking at order here. And the scientists are taking a look at this themselves and saying, hey, wait a minute. When we go into the laboratory and we experiment, this isn't the results that we're supposed to be getting. Now, the religious guys, they cannot defend the Bible, and they can't defend evolution either. They're fence straddlers. Now, there are a few religious guys. You know, there's a Kent Hovind, and there's a Karl Baugh, and there's a few others. I don't know how many there are. I'm going to estimate here. There's 330,000 preachers, Christian preachers, here in the United States, and I'd say there's probably 100 of those that can actually teach the Bible, teach the Scripture, that can actually defend the Scripture. Maybe there's 100. I say there's 100. I don't know of 100, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say, yeah, well, there might be 100 out there, but there's not very many. Not very many. And let me give you a reminder here at the halfway point that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and we recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour, they may be hostile or political or religious. They could be economic or sectarian, racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. We are reviewing the book Life, How Did It Get Here? By Evolution or by Creation. And in chapter 2, there are disagreements about evolution, and the most vociferous disagreements are among the various scientists themselves. In the same way that among religionists, you know, the most vociferous, the most rancorous arguments in religion are among the religious people. Scientists, they don't get into the fray. They're not arguing about transmigration or transmutation or transliteration or, you know, these religious terms, you know, that you hear about that you can hardly pronounce and don't know what they mean. But the scientists argue about science. Now, science isn't the issue here. I'm not taking issue with science. Evolution isn't science any more than religion represents the Bible. Catholics, Protestants, and Jews do not get their beliefs out of the Bible. In fact, what the Bible teaches and what religion teaches are at diametric opposites to one another. Same thing's true in science. You know, science is something that you can take into the laboratory and you can reproduce it. You can demonstrate it. You can document it. You can photograph it. You can taste it, touch it, hear it, feel it, smell it, see it. It's there. It's undeniable. That's science. Evolution doesn't have anything to do with science. Evolution is closer to religion than it is science. And so the people, when they graduate from college in their various scientific disciplines, they're taught evolutionary philosophy. And so with that evolutionary mindset, the geologist goes out into the field looking for proof of evolution. He does not go out into the field looking for proof of God. Now, Sir Isaac Newton did. When you take a look at the old scientists of the Middle Ages, you know, up until about 1800, those scientists, when they went out and they were studying and looking at and they were weighing and measuring and tasting and hearing and touching and feeling, they were looking at it from the creationist viewpoint. They looked in Genesis 1, 2, and 3, and so they went out and they said, oh, here's God at work. Here's God, and he's over here, you know, proving to us through his creation, which he says in the Bible. You know, the creation is the proof of God. And so that was their mindset. And so when they went out and they wrote from the perspective of Genesis 1. Today, when a scientist writes, he writes from the perspective of Darwin and Origin of Species. Then when he actually gets out there and he starts studying his scientific discipline, he finds out that evolution does not fit. He does not have a scriptural background or framework to put it into. He hasn't looked at Genesis 1. He doesn't know about it. He hasn't heard about it. And so that's what they're arguing over. These are dilemmas over origins. And regarding the question of how life originated, astronomer Robert Jastrow said, to their chagrin, that is scientists, have no clear-cut answer. Darwin acknowledged this as a problem. For example, he wrote, to suppose that the eye could have been formed by evolution seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. More than a century has passed since then. Has the problem been solved? Since Darwin made the admission himself, he says, you take a look at an eye. Your eye is an extension. It's a stem off of your brain. It's hooked directly to your brain. It's a brain stem. That's what your eye is. Now, this eye is a very highly complex camera. What you see in your brain, you see right side up. I'm looking up here at the clock, and I can see the clock up here. The truth of the matter is, that clock is upside down as it goes into my eyeball, into my retina. And then it goes back onto my brain, and then it straightens out again. I see the thing as right side up, but my eye sees it upside down. Now, we've invented cameras, and we have some pretty sophisticated camera. The most expensive, sophisticated camera is a piece of toy trash compared to an eyeball. And when you take this eyeball and you draw it up and you look at the blood vessels that feed it, and you look at the fluid that's in it, and you look at the mechanics of the way it works, it's a camera. It is a camera that is so much more involved, so much more sophisticated, so much more technical, so much more complex than a camera. It'd be like comparing a ball with a 747. You know, a ball is just kind of a chunk of rubber. It's just very simple. Now, on the contrary, since Darwin's time, that is not what has been learned about the eye, shows that it is even more complex than he understood it to be. So Jastrow said, the eye appears to have been designed. No designer of telescopes could have done better. Now, we don't go up here to Mount Palomar and say, now that Mount Palomar telescope up here just evolved accidentally. Just random chance over time, put that thing together. My God, you'd have to be a lunatic to make such a claim. And yet, the eyeball is much more complex than is Mount Palomar's telescope or the Hubble telescope. Now, I mentioned design here the other day. So when some guy comes along over here, you know, and he says, well, I'm a scientist and evolution has been clearly proven. You mean, that's like some religious guy coming over here saying, well, Catholicism is true and it's been clearly proven. To the mind of the average Catholic, that's true. In his mind, he sees Catholicism as pure, sheer, unadulterated, absolute, God-ordained truth. And then there's the rest of us. you know, those of us in the minority. You got to admit, you know, there's a billion Catholics out there, and all the rest of us combined are a minority. And we take a look at Catholicism, and we kind of shake our head and say, I think that's trash. Now, you know, those of us that think that Catholicism's trash, you know, we have our reasons. And those of you that are Catholics and think that it's a god-awful or god-honest truth, you know, well, that's your opinion. And I'm sure you've got your reasons for it. Evolutionary philosophy, and the people that believe in it have a reason. One of them made this observation. He said, the reason that we believe in evolution is because the alternative is unacceptable. In fact, he used the word totally unacceptable. The idea that there could be a God out there that created all of this would imply that he owns it all. You know, when I go out here and I create something, then it implies that I own it. Now, if this God over here owns planet Earth, I guess he could come along and tell you to dress and keep it. I guess he could come along and tell you, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and thou shalt not commit adultery. And that's what's unacceptable. The thing that's unacceptable about creation is that there is an owner out there that says this is the way you have to behave. And there isn't anybody out here who wants to behave according to the Ten Commandments. You know, I'm out here extolling the Ten Commandments. I come on the air and I tell you, I think the Ten Commandments make a lot of sense. Not from the perspective of George Gordon. Hell, I don't want to practice the Ten Commandments. I want to go commit adultery with my neighbor's wife. If you want my druthers in the matter, I'd just as soon steal as to go out and work and make a living. And there's a lot of people I don't like that I'd just as soon go out and kill. The only thing that keeps me from doing that is I look over my shoulder and I say, uh-oh, the guy that owns this thing over here told me not to do that. And he's a big, bad guy who's pretty ornery half the time and says, you know, I'm going to kill you now if you give me a bunch of lip. And then I look at that and I say, well, now that's what keeps me in line. Now, a lot of people, you know, they say, well, I could never subscribe to a religion of a hateful, despicable God like that. I say hateful. Did you know that God says that there's things that he hates? He actually uses the word hate, and he says, I hate that. And that this God over here has killed people in the past. He is in the process of killing people right now today, and he intends to kill a whole lot bunch more in the future. You know, just like the state, you know, they tell you, you know, thou shalt not kill, and if we catch you running around out here murdering people like Bundy, you know, what was his name, this Bundy guy, and they caught him and they executed him. That's what kind of keeps me in line too, you know. It's kind of the highway patrolman, you know, scares the living hell out of me. He says he's going to arrest me and take me off to jail if I drive drunk. So I drive sober because I'm in fear of that highway patrolman out there who's going to do something really bad, wicked, terrible, awful, and evil to me if he catches me out there breaking the law. That's what keeps me from violating the Ten Commandments, is that there's this guy out here claims he owns planet Earth. Now, that's unacceptable, you know, to most people. Well, I don't want to argue with you about it. If it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. I'm not here to convince you that I'm right and that you're wrong and that you ought to give your heart to Jesus or join the Jehovah's Witnesses today. I'm not here advocating Jehovah's Witness theology. I'm out here advocating this Jehovah's Witness book because it makes sense. This book called Life, How Did Life Get Here? How Did It Get Here? By Evolution or by Creation, which is put out by the Jehovah's Witnesses, tells the story correctly from the creationist point of view. They're telling you the truth. That's why I thought I'd present it. The evolution guys over here, in their minds, it's the truth. Evolution is absolutely true, you know, from his perspective. Their problem is they can't prove any of their beliefs. Can't prove a word of it. Now, ordinarily, you know, when somebody comes into court, you know, to prove a case, they'll file a complaint against somebody. And they can come in and they can prove some of the points that they're making. They bring up 10 points, they can prove five of them, they were just talking and they really can't prove them. Well, this is a philosophy. This is a religion over here. They can't prove a single statement that they've made in 200 years. That's the thing that makes me say that evolution is the greatest con that has ever been perpetrated upon the mind of man. There isn't anything out there that even comes close. The lie about the Spanish blowing up the battleship Maine in Havana Harbor had some elements of truth to it. The story had some elements of truth. And the Gulf of Tonkin, the Lusitania, Pearl Harbor. You know, some of those things actually have some elements of truth to them. Even George Bush, you know, declaring war on terror and going to war in Iraq, it has some elements of truth to it. It's not a total fabrication. Evolution is a total fabrication. It has not one element of truth to it. The geologic column doesn't exist. Outside of the textbook, it is non-existent. Missing links don't exist. Not one. And then you got all these hoaxes like Piltdown Man, for crying out loud. There's been about 10 of those. And then you got this embryo lie that's still in the textbooks to this day. That's why I call it a lie. It was disproved in 1872, and it was propounded in 1872. And then about 10 years later, 1882, the guy that propounded it admitted that it was a hoax. It has been a demonstrated lie for more than 100 years, and it's still in the textbooks today. Boys and girls, that's not a mistake. That's not a Catholic that's blinded by prejudice. That's just a lie. And as old Mark Twain used to say, it's a damn lie. That's why I thought I'd take a little time here and explain that to you. And say, hey, listen, there's a book out here on the market. And it's put out by the Jehovah's Witnesses, and you can probably get a copy. Go down to your local bookstore over here. You can read this one, too. This is one of those books. Most of these evolutionary textbooks you can't read. I got one over here. There's an outfit here in America. I don't know if you know this or not, but did you know that there's a creation society here in America that scientists belong to? That's where I got the number. 44% of scientists, people that make their livings working in laboratories, looking for cancer cures and looking at, you know, geological formations, you know, people that actually teach in the schools and colleges and universities and make their livings as scientists. 44% of them believe in creation. 56% of them claim to believe in evolution. I don't believe 56% of them actually believe it, but 56% claim it. That's pretty close to 50-50, 44-56. That's, you know, getting down to the nitty-gritty. Pretty close to half. Well, there's a society of these creation scientists, and they put out a publication. They meet every year, and I got one of their publications. I never got a second publication from them. Hell, I couldn't read the first one. These guys, if there's a 15-letter word, they'll use it rather than a 5-letter word that would tell you the same thing. So I picked it up. It's good. I wouldn't tell you not to get their material, but I mean, these guys live in an ivory tower. They live in a world all their own. They live in a world that doesn't have any semblance to reality. I mean, these guys are out in space someplace. That's why we call them space cases. But now when you sit down and you read their work, they come along and they say, well, let me tell you the story about this. And there's a guy, there's a scientist by the name of Gentry. If you want to know how long it took for the granite to form, it formed in less than 1 second. All of the granite on planet Earth formed in less than a second. And this guy's name is Gentry. And then he used to work at Oak Ridge, Tennessee, until he got fired. As soon as they found out that this guy proved scientifically using government telescopes, microscopes, and equipment to prove that all of the granite on planet Earth was created in less than a second. In fact, he's got the exact time down. They're called polonium halos. This guy is a scientist. In the laboratory, proved that all of the granite on planet Earth was created, and then there's a number out here. And it gets something like 0.019764 seconds. That's the time that it took to create all the granite. When God said, "Let there be," and there was. Well, when he created the granite on planet Earth, and there's a number, don't quote me on that number there, but this guy's name is Gentry, and he proved that, and that's another piece of science. That's scientifically demonstrable. When God said, "And let there be the dry land," do you know how long it took that dry land to form? Less than 1 second. And that can be documented, demonstrated, and proven, replicated, and duplicated in the laboratory today. That's science. That's science from the Bible. Now, the rest of this crap over here that we call evolution doesn't even rise to that level. It doesn't even rise to the level of science fiction, for crying out loud. And that's what's being pointed out here in the book, which is called Life. How did it get here? By evolution or by creation? And the reason that I'm so excited about this book is because it's written in layman's language. I mean, hell, any truck driver, if you're a kid 10, 12 years old, I think when I was 10 years old, I was in the fourth grade. Now, maybe in the third grade or second grade, I might have had a problem with this, but by the time I was in the fourth grade, surely by fifth grade, I could have read this book and every word in it and comprehended it. And it's written by scientists. I mean, the Jehovah's Witnesses had to go out here and hire some creation scientists who put the real science to work in this book from the Bible. And put it in layman's language that we can all grasp and understand. That's the amazing thing about it. And then they went out and produced 18 million copies of it. Unless they're lying to us. I mean, you know, I don't know if they're telling the truth about that. They could be lying. Maybe they put out 880 copies of it and claimed that it was 18 million. But, you know, let that be as it may. If there's 18 million copies out there, you shouldn't have any problem finding one. They should be out there, you know. This is the first one I've ever seen or heard. Somebody sent it to me. I don't know where it came from. Which happens a lot of times. You know, you people send me stuff, and I'm not discouraging you. Go ahead and send me the material. I don't use it all, but sometimes you'll send something that's really dynamite. And this is really dynamite. It's dynamite because of the simplicity behind it. So our good friends down here at the Jehovah's Witnesses, they have produced one whale of a piece of proof for the Scripture. And I'm not a Jehovah's Witness, and I don't subscribe to their theology per se, but I'm not opposed to it. I'm not sitting here telling you that it's bad, so if you're a JW, don't get mad at me and say, "Well, this guy's running us down." There's a lot of things that I don't subscribe to that may be real good. They talk about lungfish, Archaeopteryx, and Eohippus. And some of the classic cases of Darwinian change in the fossil record have had to be discarded or modified as a result of more detailed information. Now, you take a look at the science textbooks when I went to school in 1950 through 1957. And then ask yourself, how many of those science textbooks are still out here today? Still being used in the schools today? Well, boys and girls, the Bible is still in use today by creationists. After some 4,000 years of writing by 26 different secretaries, one author that we call God wrote that book. It is full of science and scientific statements that are 100% true, accurate, and correct today and can be documented in the laboratory today. Not a one of these textbooks from 1950 is still in operation today. In fact, when a science textbook gets to be 10 or 15 years old, it has to be updated and corrected. and that's because of all of the evolutionary garbage that's in it. Sir Isaac Newton's work is still extant. Galileo's work is still viable today because those scientists viewed their science and their discoveries from the viewpoint of creation and the biblical creationist viewpoint. Today, the science textbooks are written from the evolutionary perspective. And so, the scientific theories of today will be disproved over the next 10 or 15 years. That's what this chapter is all about. And then those books will have to be discarded, and the scientists will have a new worldview based upon their new evolutionary philosophy, which 10 or 15 years after that will then be renewed again, and the old ones discarded and new theories adopted. Now, if you want to go from one theory to the next, being moved by every wind of doctrine, that's your choice. Have at it. But that's not where the truth lies. The truth in this matter is unacceptable. And that is that there is an intelligence out there that created this. So you Muslims, you're sitting there saying, well, it was Allah that did that. That's fine. And you Buddhists, you're sitting there saying, well, that was Buddha that did that. And then that's fine. And you evolutionists out there are saying, well, it's just blind circumstance and chance that created that, and that's your opinion, you're entitled to it, and everybody's got their opinion. And then there's the truth. And you can accept or reject whatever it is that turns you on. Now, as a jurist, as a lawyer, you know, I have to look at things pragmatically. What is it that we can document? What can we prove? I can go into court and use the rules of evidence, and I can prove the scriptures true. I can't prove evolution true. I can't prove religion to be true. I can go in there and prove the science from the scripture, because that can be duplicated. And that's the point that this book makes. And so, let me give you the name and address again. It's Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of Pennsylvania. And it's called the International Bible Students Association, all rights reserved. The publisher is the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of New York, Incorporated. This book is published in 19 languages. And so, 18,800,000 copies out there. I can't believe that there aren't some of these in your local Bible bookstore. Surely, the Jehovah's Witnesses must have put these out in your local Bible bookstore, your local used bookstore. Hell, you might even get it from Barnes & Noble. It may still be in publication today. I don't know that it is not. I don't know that it is. The book, again, is called Life, How Did It Get Here? By evolution or by creation, put out by the Jehovah's Witnesses. And we're about out of time again. I'm going to have to cut it off and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information, go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information about our homeschooling program, go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I'll leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.